Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and tonight we have a special re-air of a show in memory of the writer Christina Murdoch, who died in April 2010. There will be a tribute reading in honor of her work on Saturday, September 18th at Carlo University's Kresge Theater that is free and open to the public. Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Christina Murdoch. Christina Murdoch graduated from the University of Pittsburgh with a degree in English writing. She has been published in Collision, the 10th Floor Review, and the Pittsburgh City Paper. She currently lives in Bellevue. She is reading today from her manuscript entitled Autumn and Sometimes Winter. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Jan. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So you're going to read poems from Autumn and Sometimes Winter.
Yeah, the first couple I'm going to start out with is a series I've been working on. The first one's called My Narcoleptic Mother is Sleeping Beauty. If she sits down for a few minutes, she falls asleep. And it is night when she wakes up, confused, because my father has carried her to their bed. And her day is over, full of dreams she can't remember, heavy blank spaces, weighted eyelids sinking, settling like dust blown from a shelf. My brother and I used to make fun of the way her short blonde hair stood up like Einstein's when we tried to wake her. Since I have been gone, her prized yellow roses have grown so that her house is an odd-shaped bouquet, and all the thorns leave scratches in the paint. This past spring, my father had to take her to the hill country and the swells of blue bonnets she loves. One minute they are pulling out of the driveway, and the next my father's Ford is parked in a field of indigo flowers, sluggish green. My narcoleptic mother is a little mermaid. She learns to swim when her father throws her from their chipped red rowboat right into the Long Island Sound. She is 4, barely bigger than what they have been casting into the sea all morning. Line, fish hooks, minnows speared through their eye sockets. She isn't afraid. This is natural. Her in salt water. Her father has been swallowing 6 packs of Old American. Empty cans flash in the sun. The way they bob makes her sleepy, and she curls up in the belly of the boat on a bed of life jackets. She can't see the shore, forgets about the sharks, the things below. Without being told, she just knows how to kick her legs, how to keep her head above water. My narcoleptic mother is Cinderella after. Whoever said things got any easier after you married the prince? He took you back to his kingdom. A few months later, the military sent him to Okinawa for 2 years. Now, you and your 6-month-old daughter live with his family in a 2-bedroom row house in Homestead. His people speak another language, say they don't understand your New York accent. When they offer you a jumbo sandwich for lunch, you are sure they expect you to eat sliced elephant. You share a room with his diabetic grandmother, who speaks only Slovak and can't get out of bed. You fall asleep in the middle of the day because you have nowhere else to go. The blue wedding dress your father bought barely fits in the closet. At night, you reach out, touch it from your bed. You hear through the walls the low whispers of his mother and 2 older sisters. You trap the prince. The baby probably isn't even his. My narcoleptic mother in Snow White. And the wicked queen today is a Baptist pastor the one my mother chased out of my hospital room because he wanted to lay his hands on my bald head and pray while I puked stomach acid into a bucket and tried not to bend the arm with the needle in it too much. Her screw off exploded his, only Jesus can save you, like the rotten apples with the squishy flesh I used to throw against the barn side. Left dark stains, later dried fruit bits on the silvery red wood. That night, she refused to go home, wrenched two plastic chairs together. Reminded me, she can fall asleep anywhere.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Christina Murdoch. It's a really interesting series of poems. Where did you come up with the narcoleptic mother idea?
Well, it kind of came from real life on that one. My mother is narcoleptic, and okay. She pretty much falls asleep anywhere. But the series really started because she was telling me about her house and her roses. And I just took that image and was kind of working it over. And I kind of started thinking about the stories our parents tell us, how they kind of become fairy tales, you know, before we're alive. They're kind of almost a mythic quality to them. So I started off with a Sleeping Beauty poem I read earlier. And just basically thought of the different stories she told me and, you know, either came up with an image first or a line, and I just worked from there.
Mm-hmm. I love, you know, your incisive sort of cutting imagery. It creates this sense of foreboding. You know, it does matter what the poem is saying, but it almost seems like it doesn't. It's just moving ahead, you know. How do you do that, and did you want to do that?
I'm not sure how I do that exactly. Usually, you know, once I have an image I want to work with, I kind of start thinking about lines, and usually I just start writing, and then, you know, the images start coming. And
mm-hmm. Well, some of our listeners who are young writers or just beginning writers are going to say, right, the images just start coming. They just come.
Not
just
always.
But I imagine some of the language comes with revision, or?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. And, I mean, even the line breaks and the lines, some of them, you know, I have a great group of people who read my work and really tell me what's not working and what could be pushed a little. Yeah. So, yeah, I rely on them, too.
Well, each, you know, every writer has a different kind of sensibility in their work, and there's definitely a darkness going on there, and which I think is very effective and compelling. Is that something that you set out to create, or something also that just develops because of the narcoleptic mother theme? Or
I think it depends on the poem. The one, the Mother is the Little Mermaid poem, I specifically wanted to, you know, get something in there, you know, the line with the minnow's spirit in the eyes.
Yeah, kind of dark.
Yeah, just a little bit. So I was definitely going for something like that. Mm-hmm. And especially the lighter poems, I don't want them to be too sugary sweet. So I always try to find maybe a different line or word that has a little more depth to it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, can you read more?
Sure.
Do you have more mother poems?
Not with me.
Okay.
Not today. The next one's called The History of My Body for Wanda Coleman. A Texas blue bonnet pressed in a sea of book spines, duplicious fish bones, feathery side streets and chicory sweet lips, mirror-framed unsunned skin, peaking perennial lupine, harvesting scars, bejos de lava de estrellas, cooling to rock streams at dawn, feeding dry oceans spoonfuls of indigo, from liquid vein to arid beyond, visions of oil wells, abramelin circles, digitalis foxglove secrets, slim-stepped housewife, engine thighs idle just before flag drop. Oh no, she's ready to go. Open quotation mark, my curtains always half drawn, wild, slow blaze. On the occasion of being mistaken for a 12-year-old boy. I am being wheeled to surgery, lying in a hospital bed, cold beneath the blankets. When she squeezes on the elevator, an older woman in a teal sweater with a Jesus Loves You pin, frizzy hair. Jesus winks, gives me the thumbs up from her shoulder. I have no hair anywhere, don't see the point in makeup. The morphine drip is just starting to seep in when she leans over, tells my dad, "Your son looks like an angel." There's no one else in the elevator. Dad doesn't know what to do, looks down at me, tells the lady thank you. She thinks that I'm 12, asks me if I am in 7th grade at Taft Middle, wants to know if I play the same video games as her grandson. I am 19, a woman. Cancer has eaten away my sex like battery acid on metal. Like a cluster of turkey buzzards gathered on Highway 90, fight over roadkill. Things I can't say out loud. I was that girl on top of the bar. I have slept in puke more times than I can count. I kissed every member of the 98 Italian soccer team, even the ugly ones. I look okay without makeup. I flashed Rob Zombie and the entire city of Galveston. My gum is stuck under the desk. I am angry. I watch cooking shows and hope for disaster. I don't say the F word as much as my mom. Everything has to match. In school, I never raised my hand when I knew the answer. I still don't. I used to sob every time I drank because I thought I would never get married and have kids. I had an abortion. I'm not afraid to dye my hair purple. I drink straight from the bottle. I lick the spoon. Once in Greece, I got so drunk I didn't know my own husband, and I punched him in the nose, hard. I pick apart my split ends. I am not to blame for the other woman. I never pushed him away. I believe in God and every other deity against my better judgment. I pretend to like foreign movies. I always pick truth, not dare. I don't want to be alone. Cancer as birth control. I went to a support group meeting once. I had cancer. Never went back. No boys. Just old men and women complaining about bowel movements and death. I wanted sex, my hair back, a pack of cigarettes. Free bar matches. I tried to imagine sex, my oxygen tank humming along, watching from the side of the bed, sucking in the air so I could breathe, fast, heavy. Single bed hospital room, my thighs always stuck to the blue vinyl recliner I sat in during chemo. IV needle, the only thing that wanted in me, left bruises, scars, like that German guy I slept with for 6 months, a year. Chemicals made me sick. I didn't remember his name. Crooked wigs, drawn on eyebrows. All that time, my hand was never good enough.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Christina Murdoch. Those cancer poems are very powerful.
Thank you.
Really strong. I wanted to talk for a minute about sound in your work. Some beautiful, surprising sounds. I think I have one. I was trying to write really quickly. I think I have one of these. It was the first poem you read, a Texas bluebonnet present in a book spine, and then a line later there's a perennial, is it supine? Or?
Oh, Peking lupine.
Peking lupine, okay. Close. But anyway, it was such a great surprise, and I, when I'm listening to your work, I feel these great moments of energy when the unexpected sound sort of pops. It's just great. So, what is my question? I guess I want to know how important sound is to you. Maybe what poets that you think of when you think of, you know, imitating sound.
Wow, there's a lot. I think sound is, you know, very important. In fact, you know, when I was, you know, a very young writer first starting out, that was one of the things that kind of caught my attention about poetry. And it, you know, some of the older poets, you know, all the great rhyme, you know, internal or, you know, end rhyme. Definitely, I think HD, she's somebody I read for a while, and she really uses sound.
She does. She uses, there's a lot of subtlety in her sound, really, yeah. A lot.
Yeah, I went through a huge phase where she was pretty much the only poet I read, so I think that might have really influenced me.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's hard to list these poets, but so that was one of the first things that got you involved in poetry.
Well, I mean, even before that, you know, there's that mandatory 2 weeks in English class where you read poetry, and it's all, you know, dead old white men, like Edgar Allan Poe, you know, Robert Frost. And they, you know, all do amazing things with sound also. So I'm sure, you know, just hearing them every year in and out, it just really is kind of an unconscious influence, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and often those 2 weeks required poetry is what turns people off to poetry the rest of their lives. But I'm glad it had that influence on you.
Well, I think the people in my class got lucky, too, because the teacher would sometimes have 20 of my poems. Because we would always have to, you know, imitate or, you know, write your own little haiku or that sort of thing. So
really nice.
Yeah. So everybody else lucked out, and I was happy too.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about your writing process a little. Sort of where you find poems. You know, some people find them walking around the streets. Some people, you know, find them from reading. From dreams, etc.
Wow, I think that's a little bit of everything. I mean, there's so much that happens in day-to-day life that definitely influences my work. Memories I have, that sort of thing, trying to, you know, rewrite them or re-communicate them.
Mm-hmm.
Dreams. Yeah, I'm pretty much open to everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you did with the mother poems, like, you know, you had a real thing happening with your mother, but and yet you really changed it with fairy tales or with, you know, other worlds coming in. Can you talk a little bit about that process of, you know, using something from the real world, so to speak, the real world, and, you know, finding the poem in it?
Well, I think for that, I usually try to find an image I like and expand from there. You know, the example you used with the mother poem, I started with the roses, but I kind of just let it take it from there and, you know, made up a few things, you know, tried to think of things that would fit in with the Sleeping Beauty theme, you know, with other poems. I think I kind of, you know, try to reimagine how things were, you know, get a really good visual in my head and then write from there.
Mm-hmm. Visual seems to be really important.
Absolutely.
In your process. Yeah. Okay. Well, how about more poems then?
Speaking of HD, here's one.
There she
is. About her. Late night Ouija board conversations with HD. I've been weighed down by visions, revelations of faithlessness, another's breath warming the ribs of his chest. Sometimes I can still feel her hands piecing together his skin, blind to see irises, tangled in tumbleweeds. There is no sense to desire. I always stumble over stale things. A word, a glance thrown free, ignored or unseen. In this book, I am swept back every time like Eurydice. And there are times I show symptoms of paralysis. My feet refuse to react, to get up and leave. Am I capable of not always looking back, turning my face forward? If memory gouges out her eyes, will I still see it all and rewind? She follows me home, down hallways, sits at the next bar stool, always on the periphery. I want to be before broken, ignorant in the old, strong enough to walk alone. HD, I've let love shatter me. Now will it sing? I need to know how you did it, the answer to moving on. when everything around you fell into black, exploded you into alone? Did you dream of the day the world would reopen, the way a paper cut pushes apart, blooms with new blood? Wedding Songs, 1. I order a box of 250 chili pepper roses. After 5 hours dethorning them, the flower in hair, skirt swirling glamour of running off to an Ecuadorian rose farm, swivels into the garbage bag, slits a few holes with stiletto thorns. I strip off the leaves, cut the stems at angles, shape them into bouquets of time, 19, 23, 47, 2. It's the littlest thing, how you fold up my favorite towel and leave it on the radiator when it's cold in the morning. 3. I am stuck reading old customs, how good wives never left the house, had opinions. I imagine living with your mother if we were still in Greece. The unforgiving whitewashed walls, the two blue shutters. I break rules all the time, brush another man's arm on a crowded bus, apply lipstick in public, cross my legs at the knee, not the ankle. When we visit your mother, I accidentally drink orange juice from heirloom crystal. 4. You worry about titanium, platinum, this millimeter thick moon. You have no feeling in the fingers of your left hand, would never know if it slid off or began to cut the flow of oxygen and marrow. You worry about losing both metal and knuckle bone. 5. At the top of the stairs, I am in off-white waiting for the song to start. The falling leaves. There is nothing but you and the wind. Looking out my kitchen window. The bacon grease cools on the stove. And out the window, a fat squirrel digs up the snow crocuses and tulips I planted only yesterday. Their anticipated colors, their purple earthy smells, have been rolled away, half eaten, into another fissure, a secret fault line you might walk over and never notice. I try to push against knowing, try to forget this remembering that solidifies in my chest like wet chalk. I don't know my body. I can't trust it now. The way it keeps leaping into oncoming traffic, not bothering to dodge all the rusty cars. You may notice. All that I'm made of is dried bone, split ends, or how I wear that other woman like a wound and finger her open so the blood cakes my nail beds. There will be no healing, no pretty pink scar. This I will tell you, I still blame myself. It was me with the knife.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Christina Murdoch. It seems to me that there's a critique in your work of, not really on the surface of your work, but of cultural expectations. Marriage shows up a lot. Ritual shows up a lot. Can you talk about how that, or why it shows up in your work?
Well, I think... just being a writer, you kind of focus on, you know, what society expects of you, what other writers expect of you. And so I think I was trying to, especially in those poems, kind of talk about that, especially with the cancer series I read earlier. You know, there's certain ways they expect you to act when you're sick. And, you know, I didn't feel I fit into any of those. So, you know, writing those poems and writing during that time, you know, when I was sick, kind of became my way of, you know, expressing myself and, mm-hmm. you know, in other ways that people probably weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm. A way to speak back. And
exactly.
There's a great bravery in your work, too, I think, with you know, seen in the poem, things they can't say out loud. There's a lot of power in that. We have time for a few more.
Okay. Leonard Cohen, Selected Poems, 1956 to 1968. Before you will take me out, you lend me your copy. The yellow is moving in from the edges, the same nicotine shade a smoker's fingertips wither into. I wonder how many days this book has lived inside your pocket, its broken spine bumping, spare change, keys, your leather wallet. The cover photos remind me of a young Dustin Hoffman, a three-headed Cohen auditioning for The Graduate. You folded over the pages with your favorite poems, circled important lines, drawn stars. We go to dinner at a Mexican place on Atwood. The waiter's sausage fingers try to corkscrew the twist-off cap on our cheap bottle of wine. We watch him, the silence twisting between us, then emptying into thin purple-red jets that splash on the white tablecloth as the waiter fills both of our glasses, only halfway. Another kind of November. I expected it to happen all at once, the second the chemo filtered through the needle, rooted itself in my bloodstream. I waited for neon green to shoot up, leave me standing in the hospital ward with nothing but 1,000 threads of dead cells to rake with my toes. On the ride home, I rolled my window down, thinking a strong breeze would blow everything back into another kind of November. One where I wasn't 20 and dying. One where it's warm and the leaves are late to fall. It became another patch clogging the shower drain, water slow to withdraw, hair trailing my spine, random clumps on my shoulders, a few more strands on the pillowcase every morning, piles of dried leaves massed below the trees during any other autumn.
The poetry of Christina Murdoch. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
It's wonderful. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Wednesday night at 7:30 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP. This has been a special re-air of the work of Christina Murdoch, who died in April 2010. There will be a tribute reading on Saturday, September 18th, at Carlo University's Kresge Theater that is free and open to the public. We will honor her life with a reading of her work and celebrate the publication of her new book, with proceeds going to her young daughter. More information is available at beattyjp@aol.com.